Welcome Mystikers and Mystikers on Mystikers.co podcast, and do not forget, there is nothing like failure. My name is Flo, like Florian. For the last 10 years, I've been setting up startups from Colombia to Georgia through France and Dubai. Going from mobile applications to websites and automation SaaS solutions, with always a French touch of digital marketing. After struggling in a lot of aspects and after learning from my own mistakes, I decided to help other entrepreneurs by sharing more stories, learnings, and experiences. Mystikers.co is the weekly podcast where I'm doing the interview of entrepreneurs worldwide. Our main goal is to share their learnings and experiences by commenting their own failures and stories. Far from being an easy task, it will take us through the big and small startups, from single entrepreneurs to bigger companies. If you're looking to solve your current problems by learning from others, this podcast is made for you. So join us on mystikers.co, and you can also find us on the main podcast platforms like Spotify and iTunes. And don't forget, subscribe to our newsletter to receive the freshest information. And keep in mind, there is nothing like failure. The first season of Mystikers.co is sponsored by Andrew Startup. For the last 12 years, Andrew has been supporting the growth of startups, but don't get me wrong, there is supporting and supporting. Andrew helps dozens of companies and got three exits in millions of dollars. His current portfolio includes companies like OLX, Tinder, and Startup Grind. Even though I've been doing the same job for about 10 years, I'm consulting him when it comes to the release of new projects or the kickoff of new ventures. When it comes to growth hacking, he's definitely one of the most talented person I've ever met and worked with. Andrew is offering us a 15% exclusive discount on his current growth hacking course for the listeners of Mystikers.co. To benefit from this offer, just visit us at mystikers.co/Andrew. mystikers.co/ANDREW mystikers.co/Andrew. This course is coming with videos, ready-to-use documents, and most important, one-to-one call with Andrew himself. Hello, Mystikers and Mystikers. Today, we are recording from Bangkok, where I will have the chance of interviewing Fabien Keller, a young French entrepreneur, young considering my age. Fabien is 27 years old. He's coming from one of the grand écoles, française. He's coming with an amazing background, actually, after living in Asia for a few years, coming from a very interesting family. And Fabien will be discussing with us today one of the most interesting problematic for any entrepreneurs and any startups is like what to do to be able to raise money. What are the challenges that will face any startups before being able to raise money? The main one being making sure you have your market fit, making sure you start making money with your project, and when you have the both together, how do you fundraise? Fabien will have a little bit that 1 hour to discuss with us and share all his experience about it. Fabien, good evening.
Good evening. So as you said, my name is Fabien Keller. I'm a 27 years old French co-founder and startupper. I'm a graduate student from École Polytechnique in Paris, and I have founded my first company while I was still a student. So as you said, we are here in Bangkok because I used to live here for over 8 years, thanks to my family. My dad is an entrepreneur. My parents actually have been in Bangkok for over 15 years now. So he has a company in Thailand and another one in Singapore. So as you said, yes, I have a background into entrepreneurship because my family has been involved into it for many, many years now. So I'm the co-founder of two companies. The first one, which is called Birdie Labs, and another one which is called Fatster, in both different industries. The first one is into finance and the other one is into social networks. And I'm happy to discuss with you about all the steps necessary to grow your company and fundraise to go international.
So if you have a company, if you're listening to us today, you have a company, you're going through the steps and the stages before actually raising money, this podcast is made for you. If you have any question, please hashtag us Mystikers on social media or drop us an email at contact@mystikers.co, and we'll make sure that actually Fabien can eventually reply to your email and share his experience about it. Fabien, before we start, you know that you must be the youngest entrepreneur that we actually have on the podcast.
Really? That's cool.
Yeah. We'll have to check with local alike because the team were pretty young also, but I'm pretty sure you're the youngest person live with us.
Perfect.
With Mistakers.co, there is nothing like failure. And Fabien, before we actually start digging into this topic that really excites me, tell us a bit more. Like, you mentioned that your dad is entrepreneur.
Correct.
So yes. You grew up in an entrepreneur family?
Exactly, yes.
How does it look like? Does it mean like you never saw your dad was always working? How was it to grow up in an entrepreneur family?
I was lucky enough that my mom stopped working to take care of myself and my two other sisters. Because as you mentioned, my dad was working a lot and he was always traveling and always abroad. So I barely see my dad when I was younger. But as we say in France, c'est un mal pour un bien, which means he was not a lot here, but he was doing everything so we could have the good life. So when we first arrived in 2003, my dad built his first company here. And we didn't see him a lot. And
so wait, when you moved here for the first time, how old were you?
I was about 12 years old.
12 years old. And back then, how did you explain your dad's job to your friend?
My dad was working into the car industry and aerospace industry, which was related to planes, rockets, and all these big industries. So back in time, I was able to say that my dad was working into the garage stuff because he was selling hardware to these big companies such as NASA or Citroën, etc. So I know he was building stuff into like a garage, but I wasn't able to say that exactly what he was doing. So now I can say what he does. He's working into pressure and leak industry, which means whenever you have like a closed habitat, such as like a space rocket cockpit or like a plane cockpit or like a special in a car, you know, when you get the tire, you know, you get pressure in the tire, right? So now you've got all these connected stuffs that pressure measures the leak, if there is like a leak of air. So he's working into that. He's building the stuff that are able to control the leaks in closed environments.
So could you actually explain this back then when you moved here for the first time? You were 12 years old. Could you explain this to your friend?
No, that was quite hard. I was able to say that he was working into the industry, right? I was working with planes, with cars, but being able to explain very well what he was doing in details, I wasn't able to do it.
And back then, was his job something that actually interested you? Or were you just like looking at your dad working too many hours, not enough home, and you were just like, you know what, I may actually look for another job?
I was actually super concerned about my dad's company because it's a big company and, you know, making a lot of revenues. And as my dad was an engineer, I used to, you know, whenever I had presents for Christmas, that was like this electronic kit that you had to build yourself. So this is what I had for presents for Christmas. So I was into the tech since I was very, like maybe 5 to 6 years old. So yeah, I was able to understand quite much what he was doing from the technical point of view. But saying that I would like to take my dad's company, I would like to take it. Well, yeah, that's what I was saying to my friends back in time because, you know, like I was proud of my parents, right? But now I can realize that's something I would never like to do.
And do you remember the first job you wanted to do when you were a kid?
Yes, I wanted to be part of the special forces in France. We have the GIGN, which is like the Navy SEALs in France. And then I wanted to be like an aircraft pilot in the army. So I got admitted into the army in France, but I got refused for medical reasons. But yeah, I wanted to be a pilot then. And I decided to become an entrepreneur for many other reasons.
So yeah, you started with something like definitely out from the movies, like I want to be pilot,
exactly,
I want to be like special force, and you end up being an entrepreneur.
Exactly.
And right now, we have slightly more movies coming with entrepreneurs, but still not enough compared to pilots and special forces. That could be the key to get more kids into entrepreneurship.
Probably, yeah.
Fabien, during these last few years, is there
any totem animal that can represent yourself, you know, as the young entrepreneurs like coming to this this industry, which is like the entrepreneurship? Is there any animal that you can actually relate yourself to?
I think, well, my favorite animal is the Firefox, which is the panda, you know, like Firefox, like the web brother, because it's a small and smart animal. It's quite fast, but quite lazy as well. Fluffy, you know, we just want to, you know, play with it. So yeah, I would compare myself to a Firefox. Yeah.
You know what? We're going to have to find some filters on Snapchat with Firefox and we share the photo on Instagram on the podcast. So yeah, I mean, first you're the youngest entrepreneur we have on the podcast, then you're the first Firefox at the totem animal. Nobody ever mentioned Firefox.
Perfect, perfect.
I like it. And is there any entrepreneur that you really appreciate now that you are one of them? Is there anyone, you know, that truly inspired you, apart from your dad, maybe?
Yeah. So my dad would be the first one I found inspiration into. But of course, I like big names such as Mark Zuckerberg or Elon Musk or Peter Thiel as well. And in France, we have many great entrepreneurs such as Thierry Petit, Alexis Bonio, or even Xavier Niel. So these guys are like pure references to me, yeah.
And Xavier Niel, is sometimes mentioned in the pirates of entrepreneurship.
Yeah.
That could be one.
You have to be a pirate to be an entrepreneur.
Yeah, so a few good names, and the list of all those entrepreneurs will be available on the podcast. So nowadays, you know, talking about entrepreneurship and a bit of cliche, you know, mentioning the biggest name and so on, is there any question you're tired of answering as an entrepreneur? The kind of very cliche question, you know, that your friends maybe working in different industry will come and ask you?
Yeah, well, they always say that I can schedule whatever, you know, like I got like free time. They're sure they believe that as I am the CEO of my companies, then I will be able to like arrange my schedule whatever I want, whereas I can't, you know, like I'm working a lot every days, and they ask me like, yeah, but you could take free time on the weekdays. I'm like, no. But yes, they all think, they all expect me to be available when they are available because they have like their basic office hours. And yeah, but you're the boss. You can find time for yourself. No.
And I can confirm that it took me lots of time trying to get you on the podcast.
Yes, right.
To find the time to actually prepare the podcast.
Exactly.
And we won't disclose the secret information that we just did the preparation call before coming for the interview. But that gives a right idea of, you know, all the stress you must have as an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
But let's say, like, now that people see you this way, how much do you think they see you in the real scale from 0 to 10? How much do you think your friends see you as a weird person, from 0 being like a normal person to 10 being like a bloody weird person?
I would say 11.
11?
Yeah.
No, we already discussed this on the podcast. It's forbidden to be higher than 10.
Well, yes, you can put it, you can give a 9, I think.
9?
Yeah.
Why do you think that people see you weird 9 on 10?
Because you have to be a little bit crazy to become an entrepreneur, because you have to love risk, you have to love working, and you have to love putting stuff you like away, you know, like just rearrange your schedule based on your priorities. And so, yeah, whenever people used to know me when I was not an entrepreneur, I was partying every day, every weekend, you know, like having fun. And since I become responsible, if I would say, you know, like I just sliced everything, and so they thought like, yeah, they were thinking about me like I changed a lot, and I wasn't fitting with them anymore. They're still my friends, though. You know, like they're still my friends.
Except like you see them less than it used
exactly.
to.
Exactly. Yeah, super hard to see my friends. Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, for being an entrepreneur myself, it's definitely something that we have to mention. But you know, like the weird coincidence is like today, because we are recording today on the 17th of May. And the podcast that we released today was the one where we interview May, who was making the podcast on how to actually find the right balance between work life and spare time.
Super
she
hard.
Had a very personal way of doing it. She's just like, you know what, my business is doing 5. I'm happy with 5. I don't go to six because six means like hiring more people and growing the business.
More stress.
And I will stay at five. Yes. That was a way. It's definitely, it's legit. It's one option of doing it. It's not the path that we choose most of the entrepreneurs, especially if they are, you know, willing to sell, willing to grow, willing to scale, willing to make more money with an exit. But it was very interesting to get the feedback. So if you're listening to us today, feel free to have a look on the podcast number 7 with May, who is mentioning how she's actually handling the balance work life and personal life. Wanna kick off your project with the best of the best? Visit mistakers.co/Andrew, mistakers.co/Andrew, and get an expert in growth hacking by your side. Andrew is offering new step-by-step documents to support the launch of any project, from mobile application to website. His course includes video, one-to-one calls, and a lot of ready-to-use solutions. Andrew's startup is also offering us an exclusive 15% discount on any of his packages. So, don't wait any longer and hire the best of the best. So Fabien, Buddy Labs was your first startup, the first one you actually co-founded. And the reason of today's podcast is to get your experience about the steps to actually being able to raise money with two main issues and challenges. The first one being making sure we have the right market fit and making sure the app or the solution we provide is actually making money. It's not, as the usual podcast, we have only one problematic, because the main one behind it being how to raise money and what challenges we're going to face on the way. But as we already discussed about it, the main challenge, the main part to be able to get raise money will be like to solve those two issues. So understanding the market, solving the problems, making sure people can actually pay for it. Fabien, before we go into this one, could you maybe sum up what was your project and how did you come with this idea and how did you actually start it?
Sure. So Buddy Labs was a fintech company. Fintech is a contraction of finance technology. So it was a fintech startup. And our mission as a fintech startup was to help the bank's clients, the millennials, as we call us now, to save money in the most painless way ever, which is something the banks don't know how to do, right? So the first idea came up when I was doing my groceries. You know, I was just after the class, I went to buy some bread at the shop. And when I paid at the checkout, I'd been asked to round up my payments and give the change to a charity. And of course, I gave the money, right? But I said, okay, this concept is super nice. You pay, you round up, and you give the change. I said, okay, I want to adapt this one. I pay, I round up, and I save the change for myself. So this is how the idea came up, yeah.
It's a bit like Robin the Hood. It was like,
exactly.
Get the money for me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, get every pennies, every cent you can have and save it because it's very painless. You know, it's like, you know, when we were kids, we used to have a piggy bank when we put all the coins, and that was the same idea, but we made it digital.
A digital
piggy bank. Correct. Yes, exactly.
So you came with this idea, and how much time did it take you to actually, like, you know, define the idea and start creating the startups? Did you come back home straight away and say, guys, put down your hands on the table, we're going to start a new project? How much time did it take you to actually start it?
I had the idea came up in October 2014, and I didn't have the skills to code myself. So I've been asking out to all of my friends and families. I'm looking for someone, a tech guy or tech woman, whatever, but someone who is able to build something like an app, mobile application, because I wasn't able to do it. So it took about 1 month, I would say, until I met Julien, my co-founder and CTO. And Julien was one of the best friends of my brother-in-law. So that was quite easy. I have been asking Mathieu, my brother-in-law. I said, hey, Mathieu, do you know anyone who could help me coding something? So, yeah, I know a guy. He's the kind of guy, you know, that watches, whenever you watch a movie with the guy, he's the one typing next to you. So I said, okay, I want to meet this guy now. And then we arranged a meeting in Paris, in the 11th district of Paris. next to Nation area. And then I met Julien, and a few days afterwards, Julien texted me, said, "Hey, Fabien, look what I've done on Skype." I remember that was on Skype. And he showed me the mobile, you know, like on Skype from the camera. And he had already done the first tech developments. So I was like, okay, this is the beginning of something great, right?
And you're starting, so straight away, after the first meeting, you actually started developing it.
Yes. Actually, I was still a student. I was still studying at school. And so I went to see the administration of the school saying, okay, this is my schedule, but please, can you guys arrange it so I can have free time to build my company? And they said, no. So I said, fuck it. And I said, okay, I quit. So I dropped out in the middle of my studies to start the company. And Julien, yeah, right away after I told him the idea, he was like, wow, this is super nice. But the thing is, Julien was part of the, he was a security engineer for Société Générale. So he used to work in the bank for...
So you actually like onboarded someone who actually got the connections, exactly, the knowledge, the learnings and the skills to help you.
Exactly. He used, you know, the compliance, all the tech, the regulations, what we should do, what we should not do in case of one day we work with the bank, you know. So yeah, he was the best guy to start this company with.
And how long did it take you before you actually have in your hand a proper MVP ready to be used or at least displayed? Because again, the first one you saw on the Skype was not something you could actually like showcase to anyone.
You know, there is this famous rule when you build a company, whatever company that is, not especially a startup, not especially digital, but fake it until you make it, which means you have to show people that you're building something and they have to say, oh yes, I want this. And what I've done was, you know, because how does the app works is, so the first mobile application that we had, Birdie Sent, whenever you make a payment by bank card, you go to McDonald's, for example, and you pay like your menu, €9.10, right? So the app will detect your payment saying, hey, you paid this much. Do you want to round up to the top €10 or top €5 or next euro? And then the change will be transferred from your current account to a savings account that we open for you, right? And so, of course, this takes time to build up.
Because, yeah, you have to connect the application to external sources like...
Exactly. Banks and wallet systems, e-wallet systems. It's like a digital account where you can save money. So, yeah, this takes time because you have to connect. You have to first contact these guys, say, hey, this is what we do. So they have to do like an audit of your company first. They have to meet them. Then they have to give you an access to their code. And then you do a review with these guys. So it takes time. It takes time. But we were lucky enough to find, the great partner at the beginning, which was called Linxo. So Linxo is one of the top major fintech player in France, even in Europe. So when we had the idea and then we started to build it, I think the app was available on Android at the end of 2015. So until that, we had something which was live. It took about 3 months to connect everything all together, but we did not publish the app on the stores until the end of 2015.
And how many banks had you got connected back then?
Over 150.
150 through Linxo, which is already getting the connection.
Correct.
So yeah, you plug to Linxo and they give you access.
Exactly. And we did it by ourselves. So we connected ourselves to banks. You know, it's called scrapping. You know, scrapping, what is it, right? Yeah. And so we scrapped a few banks. But it's takes too much time and, you know, it's not our job. Our job is to help people save money, not to ensure a secure connection to the banks. So there were already established players who could do it. So I said, okay, let's play with these guys because we don't have time to waste with them. I mean, don't have time to waste on that and invest money on the security. It's not our job.
So first learning is like instead of trying to reinvent the wheel, if the wheel is already up there,
go for it.
Yeah, go for it.
Go for it. Yeah.
It's maybe not exactly match your car, but it will do the job. So
exactly. And the partnership we had with Linxo was super smart. We didn't pay anything for like maybe 3.5 years with them. We didn't pay anything because they wanted. We were actually the first startup that was using their APIs, and now Linxo is selling. Solution which is called Linxo Connect, where you can plug their service on your app, for example. So it's open to every companies in the world. And the Links to Connect stuff, we developed it with them. So that was a deal. We don't pay, but we help you guys monitor and develop stuff that you will be able to
release. Based on your company to exactly. be like the first player.
We were like the MVP for them.
That's I like this idea. I mean, it's stupidly smart. Like someone needs your solution, deal with them. So
exactly. You have to play, you have to take risk altogether. It's the most important thing.
So you released your application in 2015, connected through Linxo to a few hundred, to over 100 banks.
Correct, yeah.
And so from the start, people started not only the application, because you're not coming from a marketing background, you're coming from an engineer background, if I'm right.
Yeah.
And if your partner is developer, I mean, it's like, how did you start doing the marketing? Because you came with one vision of the business.
Well, I've been, you know, in Ecole Polytechnique, that was a postgraduate program that I've been doing, most specialized into finance and management. But I was, you know, when I dropped out from a university in France, when I was into the third year, I was studying at La Sorbonne in Paris, Panthéon-Assas to be precise, which is part of Sorbonne Group. And Sorbonne called me saying, you left the school to build a company. I was like, yeah, because you guys were not able to provide me or rearrange my schedule so I can build my company. So I said, fuck off, right? And he said, wait. Don't be rude, because we have something for you. We have a program for you. And so I was the beta tester for La Sorbonne of a program called The Cantillon. The Cantillon is an entrepreneurship, it's like a short-term MBA, six months short-term MBA that was taught by INSEAD graduates. You know INSEAD, the business school, it's one of the top with Harvard and Stanford. You know, you get like for the MBAs, INSEAD is one of the very top, I think number one in the world, if I'm right. And so I was taught entrepreneurship by these guys for over 6 months, paid by La Sorbonne. So I've been learning in 6 months more than what people learn in 5 years, you know, doing like their master's degree in business schools, etc.
So your way of solving problem is to find the beta test program that will help you.
Yeah,
I like it. So there's problem, let's find the solution. And that's maybe the entrepreneur mindsets that we're gonna have to discuss for the next part. So you did this course, you have a bit more knowledge on marketing and startups and companies with the top players on the market in this.
Yeah.
You release your company, you release the first, sorry, no, not the company, but the app in 2015. And how much time did it take you before you start getting a consequent number of downloads? Meaning, like, how much time did it take you to reach the 1,000 downloads?
So we started, you know, there is this, you know, when you have no money, you have to innovate, right? And so what I was doing, because we were into the Paris co-working spaces, etc. So I had a few bunch of friends. So when it was live, I just sent a text, hey guys, I've downloaded, blah, 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 blah. So we get about, I would say 15 users the first week. And then what I've been doing was, you know, we had some flyers that I was sticking into the toilets of every co-working space. Because I know these guys were into digital, and that was a way for me to be known and just to do like free advertising in the toilet. Just stick up the flyer on the toilet paper stuff, right? So people, you know, like they could watch only that. So this is how we started. And then I was talking with Julien, my co-founder, because there is a great way in France to get visibility. If either you spend money and then you become visible, or you hack the stuffs. We were not like huge hackers, but the way we've getting known was by doing hackathons, you know, hackathons by big groups organized, like these big events, tech events for 2-3 days. So these groups say, hey, we have an issue and we want to invite 50 startups to solve our problems. And the one who wins gets money and can be involved into the company with us. So Say Discount did that. Ingenico, which is an electronic payment terminal seller in the world. Microsoft. So we've been doing all these, even La Poste in France. So we've been doing all these hackathons. So for example, Say Discount, their issue they wanted to solve was, how do you keep clients on the mobile app? How do I compete with Amazon? So I said, hey guys, we have a super solution, which is called Ces Matières Liens. It's a solution for your clients to save money every time they make a payment. Whenever they pay on Amazon, they will save the change for the purchase at Ces Discount. And so we didn't win the hackathon, but we had all the team behind us, all the mentors saying, oh wow, guys, this is super smart. But they were not looking for this kind of solution. But we say, okay, we have a solution that collects money. We will try to adapt it for cities counts with a new feature into the mobile app, which is called Cemateria. Then we've been going to La Poste. And La Poste, they were looking for going digital for, you know, the timbre and how do you call that, like the small
stamp.
The stamps. Thank you, the stamps. They were looking to go digital. And when we arrived for the hackathon of La Poste, I said, hey guys, but remember, you have the piège jaune. And piège jaune is old as fuck. Either you give like the small coins in the small box, and people either steal the money or they lose the box or they get...
So for the non-French listener of the podcast, the piège jaune is organized
charity.
By La Poste. Yeah, it's a charity event on which you put in a small box all the little coins you will have, all the change you have.
Exactly.
So it's technically like your concept that
exactly.
was used like for lots of years, because when I was kids back then, we
yeah,
used to do that
right.
also.
Yeah, I used to do it. And so, yeah, so we said to La Poste, okay, you guys are doing stamps and you want to go digital, so okay, we get it. But this is what you guys don't get, is you're getting old and collecting money for Le Piège Jaune is getting so hard and you need to go digital. So my name is Fabien, I'm the co-founder of Birdie Sand and blah, 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 blah. So we didn't win either because they were looking for other solutions, but you always have a bunch of journalists. We know when they do like big hackathons with big groups. So this is how we get visibility. And like 2 weeks after, we got featured on BFM TV.
BFM TV being one of the biggest
yeah, it's like Fox
News.
News in, yeah. Better than Fox News, but yeah, it's daily news medias. Yeah.
So at this stage on your startup journey, you have a product and you're trying to go through the market fit, trying to make sure that people use it. So what do you think was the biggest mistake you've done trying to identify the right market fit for you?
I think the biggest mistake was I was looking to raise money too early. I was focusing on finding investors. And investors were looking in tech companies with a great market fit. So I would say that whenever you build a company, and in our case, for Birdie Sand, the biggest mistake, was maybe not to find, to look for the best market fit at start and go making money at start. And this is the two main issues that we had, was to rush, you know, like to burn all those steps. And we thought that we could run so fast that we could find investors very quickly, whereas it was not the case. So what did we do was, okay, so we have a product. It's great. People like it. They save about 15 euros per month. But how can we improve that? How can we make it going viral? How can we collect more money, improve our tech, so we can maybe make other companies have an interest in what we do, such as banks, for example. So the biggest work was to go step by step. You know, you get your early adopters using the app. Early adopters are the very first users who get the app. And so once we had these issues, I said, okay, we have to organize meetings with our users. So we did pizza parties and with a lot of beer and all this stuff. And there's a video which is quite cool online where we do a pizza party with beer and stuff.
And the video will be accessible on
thestickers.co/blog. Yeah. The hardest part was to say, okay, we have 10 users. How can we make those 10 users reach 50 users? And how can we grow from 50 to 100, 100 to 500, 500 to 1,000? And then it's getting easier. The hardest part when you build an app is to really understand why people will use it, why they will stay on that, what will be the lifetime customer journey of your, I mean, how long will they last in the app? How can you make viral? How can you grow for peanuts without spending a lot of cash? And these are super hard when you don't have any experience before. It's very difficult, very, very difficult.
So when you started doing the pizza party and so on, how many regular users you have? How many actually people behind you who like the product, who start using it? How many early adopters, how many happy users and happy early adopters you had back then?
I would say...
Are you talking about dozens, hundreds, thousands?
No, dozens.
Dozens?
Yeah.
So yeah, because for what you're explaining, in one side you're trying to understand the needs of a dozens of early adopters, and on the other side you're trying to solve the issue of a bigger company. So trying at the same time with the same solution to be like B2B and B2C.
Yes, correct. We were, at first we were full B2C. And my idea, my first idea, my the very first idea of Birdie was I pay, I round up, and I invest to change on the stock market. So if you want to buy Apple shares or Facebook shares or whatever, you can invest with 50 cents in Apple, for example. That was brilliant. And really, like, and we had a few competitors in the US doing that, and these guys have been doing a lot of money. But going B2C means having a lot of cash at start, because you have to pay for the user acquisition, etc. It's a super risky model. And yeah, so we were B2C at first, we wanted to do that. And once there was one bank, it was a Carrefour bank. Carrefour is like a huge retailer in France, and they have a bank session now, banking session with Carrefour. And so the girl says, hey, we've seen you guys. Is your solution available to integrate into other like third-party systems? And I said, yeah, sure it is. It was not. I said, yeah, of course it is.
Because if you have money, everything is.
Yeah, exactly, right? And so, yeah, and then we said, okay, we have a B2B card in the ads, and we have to play with that. So we wanted to do crowdfunding, you know, sell BirdieSend as a money collection system for Kickstarter, for example, for Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. Then we've been going to charities, the Red Cross. We've been going to retailers, Auchan, so people save money so they can spend in Auchan, you know. For Deezer, save money to spend with your at your Deezer account. Even YouPorn, I contacted YouPorn. So people save money so they can pay their like Prime subscription.
I like the idea, especially porn is very. I think that YouPorn is good, but like Pornhub tends to get.
Yeah,
like,
that was Pornhub, yeah. Not YouPorn.
Because,
Pornhub, yeah.
Pornhub tends to get the craziest marketing operation.
They're crazy guys, yeah. Super good guys. Yeah.
So let's go back to so. You start with the market fit, trying to understand how you can actually position it yourself in this one. You mentioned that for you the main mistake issue was maybe trying to raise money too early on that.
Yeah.
And what will be your main learning after this experience of trying to identify the right market fit with a product relatively new and not massively used by people?
That's a good question. I think it can be like explain it in a very simple sentence, which is until you don't have a client, it's a hobby, it's not a company. And company is made to make cash. So yeah, until you don't have paid clients, or until you don't have a super high growth, weekly growth, maybe 5 to 10% weekly growth, then it's not gonna be huge.
And with the experience, how many I mean, of course, it depends on business model, company, and so on. But what do you think should be the ideal target for people before they, you know, in the number of paid users, to actually say, you know what, like, actually, right now, there is something happening? Should it be more in the growth of the users, in the total numbers? And once again, it depends on so many parameters.
Sure,
but for you, yeah. How would you understand it right now? Do you consider that the first one is the key, or do you say, like, right now, the first 100, the first 1,000?
I think. Depends where you live, what is your business. I mean, in the US, these guys invest a lot of money for companies. You know, you start to have growth, you don't make cash, people will still invest in your company. In France, the investors are more cold about that, which means if, you know, they don't want to lose their money, which makes sense, huh?
No, $2,000 anymore.
Yeah. But when they invest the money, they want to have like super like, early growing company, and they wanted to have cash, and even though like you know, they will invest maybe like 200,000 euros, which is nothing for a company, and they will ask you to get the break even, which is like your profits equilibrium, right?
Spendings.
Yeah, and in the coming 6 months, so you're like, no, guys, you know it doesn't work like that, and in our case, we raised money. We have actually signed a huge fundraising deal with a US venture capital because we had two paid clients. When I mean paid clients is two banks.
Yeah, two B2 or B2B.
Yeah, so huge clients, which is Société Générale and BNP Paribas. And so when you sign with two banks, regarding the fact that it takes months to discuss with them, and it's so hard to get integrated into their systems, then they say, okay, there is something to do with these guys.
So the first part for you, the market fit was sold, let's say, like when you actually managed to get the first customer, that takes directly to the next part of the question, the monetization of the product. And as you clearly mentioned, until you have the first paid users, it's a hobby, not a company.
Yeah.
And it's a good advice, I think, to share with the listener on the podcast, because most of the time, you're pretty sure that your idea is the best and people will love it.
Yeah.
But the difference between something free and something paid is how you're going to pay your bill and how you're going to pay the salary and when you're going to start burning cash and actually generate profits.
Regarding the market fits, and I might say something about that. And what you said is super right. When I was starting Birdie at the very beginning, there is this famous way of thinking, which is called lean startup. And so I remember that was into the winter 2015, maybe January or February. So we didn't have anything live yet. You know, the app was not released yet. But I was Saturday morning, it was cold as fuck, I remember. I was a student doing some research about millennials and the way they see savings, how they see the banks, right? So I was going to see young people in the streets, like students. Say, hey guys, I'm a student doing some research for that. Do you have time for me? Yeah, 2 minutes. And what I was asking these guys was, oh, but you've just done shopping right now, right? Oh yeah, I bought two trousers, blah blah blah, one T-shirt, whatever. It's, oh yeah, so how much did you spend? Do you have? It's Saturday. Are you going out tonight? You have still money to go out? Oh well, no, I don't have any money left. But why don't you have money left? Because your parents don't give you enough, or because you don't know how to save money? Oh man, yeah. Whenever I get 1 euro, I spend it. Oh, and did you look for solutions? You know, like, have you been looking for solutions to help you save money? Oh yeah, but it's either the banks, which is boring as fuck, or paid service, and I don't want to spend money on that. So I'm okay, interesting. So they're gonna take your contacts. And I guess, yeah, sure. And 2 weeks after, I said, okay, guys, I'm going to be honest. I was not a student. And if you told me that last time, this is what we do. This is our app. And I think it might answer your problem, saving money. And he said, oh, wow, super interesting. And then they've been subscribing on the waiting list. And once they've been doing that in front of you, subscribing to the waiting list, then yes, it means that you start to have market fit. Because people have the willingness to use it.
So what advice would you give to people then? It's like the way you mentioned it, it's like get landing page, start collecting information of people willing to click on the button buy, yeah. Even though it's still not ready to be purchased.
Yeah. Yeah.
But at least give you some right insight.
You have to keep it simple.
Keep it simple, try to validate the idea
you have. Landing page is okay, you get a picture, this is the product, even though it can be like a mock-up doing a Photoshop or sketch or whatever. Okay, this is what we do. So you get the big title, saving money is so easy, blam, pay, round up and save your change. Subscribe, it's going to be available in a few months. Click, done. That's all.
Okay, that's interesting. There's something also I like doing when it comes to validating hypotheses and ideas. Instead of telling it will be available in a few months, I say this after people click on the button, which means like the button will say like free formula, premium formula and so on. Then it will give me an idea of how many people are actually looking for the free solution or the demonstration or the other ones. Yeah. And the next pop-up tell them like, okay guys, you know what, actually you're on waiting list because the solution is open only to
N
number of
smart
users.
Smart,
yeah. I mean, both ideas make sense. The main thematics behind is to make sure that you can actually have some data to help you take the decision and just don't go only with your gut, tend you to trick you as often as possible.
Yeah, exactly.
So for market fits, as you mentioned, test until you have the first paid users and you may be on the right track for the rest.
Test and learn is so important. You get something, you get a V1 of your product, you test, you improve, okay? So you can look for a bigger batch of users. You start from 10 to, then you look out for 50 users, then you call each of them. I call like almost single users that we had, each of them. Hey, this is Fabian, I'm the co-founder and CEO, blah, 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 blah. So can you give me like a wish list of 3 things that we like to see in the app and 3 things that we like to remove from the app? And I call them one by one. And
So most of the time people were, no, it's great. I don't know what could we improve. You know, like people didn't give like, they actually had cheaty ideas for one of them. But we had a few guys, I would say like digital native, like fan of mobile apps, and we had great feedbacks on, with them. So yeah, you actually start small. You have to think big, but start small, know who you are, and meet all of your users at start and improve with them, test, improve, then look out for more users. You call them one by one, okay, improve, test, up, 100 users, etc., etc.
And how did you know you had the market fit?
You have the market fit when you don't spend any money and you have people coming in the app.
So for you, market fit is natural growth.
Yeah, it's growth, and the life cycle of the users is important as well, which means when people stay on the app and when people, usually the market fit in Bird Descent was quite easy to see because people didn't want to risk their money too much. Maybe it's a scam, you know, so I will link up my account, I will link up my credit card, whatever, and I will just start by saving like 50 cents, right? And once I've said, okay, then I break my online piggy bank and I transfer the money back on my account. Oh, yes, it's working. And then they were coming back. So now we know that we have a market fit.
That's good. I like the idea of testing.
It costs us more money to transfer the 50 cents.
To transfer
cents.
The
yeah.
50 cents.
And I'm like, guys, fuck it. You know?
As long as people start using it, you're getting on the first part.
Exactly.
So that's taking the second part, like the monetization of your solution. Because you start having people on which you're actually losing money when they do the little transfer,
yeah.
Which means like you're still not profitable and you're far from being profitable.
Yeah.
And on the other side, you have two big banks that actually sign the deals. So when it comes to the monetization, what business model you decided to go for? Did you get a list of ideas you wanted to test? Did you get some mentors telling you, try this, try that? How did you find out your own business model?
So one thing is important to know is that the app, the mobile application, the B2C, which is available for everyone, we lose money with the app. We don't make any money even now. We've been over like 1.4 million euros of savings has been transferred on the app. And you have transfer fees every time you transfer your users' money, right? So we spend a lot of money on our B2C app. And it's free, and we don't do ads, and we don't sell the data at all. Like, we lose money with the app. But by doing that, people use it. It's free. You know, they don't feel that they're getting fucked. It's not like, you know, with these 50 pages agreement you have to sign. It's super simple. You know, we kept it super simple. By doing that, we had growth, people using it, good reviews on the store because it was a free service. And this is the way we showed the banks, guys, what we do is the best service. We are the best. Because we have people coming in the app, people leave great reviews, we are fair with our users, so yes, you can trust us. And it's by building this reputation, if I may say, because we were a very small company. But this is by doing that, by not looking for monetization on the B2C side, it made us grow, and by growing, we had the interest of the big ones. And so how do we make cash with the big ones? So how we price? It's a good question, and that was actually super hard to know how do you price a bank. Because, you know, these guys have a lot of money, and at the same time, they don't want to spend money, and so it was hard. So and I was lucky enough to work with Julien and Clément, my third co-founder who joined the adventure. So okay, so how does a bank work? So when they buy solutions, they pay a fee, like a fixed fee, and then they might pay like a monthly recurring to their providers, for example. Yeah, this is how it works. So we said, okay, let's follow this. We are not gonna reinvent the stuff. So whenever a bank works with us, when they integrate our solution as a white label solution, which means it's not branded as Bird Descent, it's the bank solution, but our engine behind. So there is a setup fee, which is about, depends, but from 15,000 euros to over 50,000 euros, depending on the size of the bank and what do they want to implement into their apps. And then there is a fixed fee per user, which code, whenever a user use our engine, I mean, one of the clients use our engine, they pay a monthly fee. And it starts from 15 cents to 3 cents, depending on the volume.
Now, how did you decide to go for this one? Was it like because your co-founders knew already the market? Is it because you've been doing some reviews? Mentors?
Mentors helped us. And we know we had three super mentors. One is Adrien Aumont, which is the co-founder of KissKissBankBank, you know, the number one crowdfunding platform in France. We had Nicolas Woussen. Nicolas Woussen was the CFO of Chiron Privé, and he was the CFO of another company. And this guy has been doing two IPOs in his life. IPOs is when a company goes public, right? So super smart guy. And our third mentor was Emery Leong. Emery Leong was the head of innovation world at Société Générale.
So big guys.
Yeah, super huge guy. And super chill and super brilliant guy. And yeah, so we were talking business about with our mentors, how do we price, how much do we price? And unfortunately, I'm sorry to say that, but there is no rule. You can price a client in a different way than another one for the same product. It depends. Until you don't have a regular recurring business, then it's hard to find the good pricing and the way of pricing your clients. But in the case with Société Générale BNP Paribas, so yes, there is a fixed fee. So when they integrate the service, you have to pay a fee, like an access fee, and then a set of fees, sorry. And then there is a recurring revenue depending on how much of their clients use the service.
And regarding the monetization, what do you think was your biggest mistake?
I think, a huge client, I mean, prospect back in time, was looking for our solution and they were super implied, like super motivated. And I sent them like a quotation, like just to try the service offline, you know, so we take the app of the bank and we decompile it on our side, we integrate our service and then we push it back to their employees offline so they can try the service. And I've sent a quotation of over 100,000 euros for for like a 50 people onboarding service for 3 months. And they said, fuck you. So yeah, that was, I think, the biggest mistake. Because I'm sure that we could have signed for 30K, but 100, no.
So yeah, overpricing the solution was...
I didn't know, like, I said it's a bank, you know, maybe we could price that a million, I don't know. So yeah, I've been sending in quotations that way, sometimes way too high or way too low, and by being too low, you kill the trust. Oh, it's too cheap, so people don't buy it.
So regarding monetization, your main issue was to be able to price something without external references.
Exactly, super hard. Is 20,000 euros a good price to do like a proof of concept with them? Is 50K okay? When you integrate, you know, when you go like into the production process with them, so you're going mass market with the bank, is 100,000 not enough? Should we price 50K, 1 million? You know, it's so hard. And the only answer is your clients when they say, okay, or, you know, they will always negotiate.
Even when you have the check on the table, you know, you found the solution. But have you follow any, I don't know, any white paper, any guidelines?
No,
any...
No, I hate reading. I never read. Never.
And I'm pretty sure it's pretty hard also to try to fit your own problematic to something which is not exactly the same.
Yeah, I mean, every company is different and every services that exist are priced in different way. And, you know, we are not selling, it's not like a SaaS offer. It's not like, it's a software that we sell, but it's not like something that we can price $100 and sell it to many people, you know. It's a bank integration with a lot of money to be involved in. So there is a bank on our side and on the bank side. So it takes time to sign your clients. It takes a lot of time. So it's very hard to get the perfect monetization, even now.
So if you try to wrap up the first two challenges we mentioned, regarding the market fit you mentioned, like you have a hobby until you have your first paid customer, that takes you to the second challenge, which is like, how actually you can monetize these first users. And regarding the monetization, what do you think was your main learning behind this?
There is one, I mean, now is the best learning I would have is maybe to look for smaller clients, not going with banks at start. So not looking for the big players at start. So trying to go smaller.
Why? Because of the flexibility?
Exactly, agility. Mostly agility, which means, you know, that you have to picture yourself when you are a small company, you have to picture yourself as a very small boat, you know, that can like do three turnarounds into two waves, right? And the banks is the big boat, you know, that takes 40 kilometers to just like do your turn, you're right? And so whenever they want to, you know, big guys, they have always, they will have an interest in what you do. If you get in touch with them, they love what you do. But they're into their decision process. It takes ages to say yes or no. And once it's yes, then you go into negotiation with them. Like, it's a real pain in the ass.
And the cash flow may not follow in the time being.
Exactly. You can die 50 times until they pay you. Really. Really, really, really. And this is the hardest thing, is to work with big corporates at start is not the best idea we have.
So get the right market fit with the first paid customer.
Correct.
And then monetize it, looking for actually people that will not kill your cash flow.
Exactly.
So
like to find the patents that will allow you to, yes, to get regular money coming every month. And this is super hard. This is super hard. Really.
Yeah, because like it's your own idea and it's you and yourself making yourself happy.
Yeah.
Until you can actually cover your cost and not relying on your friends for and family money or love money or whatever investments you have, until you can actually cover your cost selling a solution, answering people's problems.
That is good.
You're making yourself happy by yourself, which is not.
But even when you're not, even when you're like cash flow positive, it's the adventure is good, because even though when you didn't reach like the equilibrium, but once it's growing every month, then you feel happy, because you know you're building stuff that's pay you back, and yeah, it's not about being cash flow positive very early, it's about growing early.
And that's taking us to the third point, because like you understood that you have something which is fitting the market needs, you start getting a monetization of your solution, and now you decide to go raise money. First question is like, why did you decide to go raise money?
Because we had a product that was getting a good market fit. We were visible in all the press in France. We got visible in the press in the US as well for what we did. And I was looking, you know, look, you don't raise money to validate a business model. And this is one of the biggest mistakes people do. They want to raise money because they want to validate the idea. In our case, I wanted to raise money because we wanted to go international. By international, going to the US, going to Asia, etc., etc. So there is a tricky part, is finding the good investors. And how do you look for investors? And you have plenty of them in Paris, plenty of them in the world. And we have been talking with some business angels clubs. Business angels are like investors like you and me, private guys who've been doing a lot of money, and they want to invest 5, 10, 15,000 euros in companies a few times a year. And when you raise money, it's super important to look for someone which is able to bring you financial capital first and human capital, because it's super important to being advised. There is no need to get cash only, because you can do a loan with a bank or whatever. No, you have to get the great investors that knows your market, knows what you do, and then can bring the good money, smart money, not giving away money just to validate some stuff. You get money to grow, and you have to find the best investors that knows your industry to grow with them. I mean, in my opinion, there is no other interest.
So finding the right investors is a good challenge. And during this time, what was your biggest mistake? Because as you mentioned, there are lots of challenges behind this, lots of problems that will arise whenever you start raising money, and especially when it's been a few weeks, few months, you may be willing to get the first money when it's not the right money for you, and that may just crash your company in a few weeks. So for you at this stage, what was your biggest mistake when it comes to raise money?
We've been too much diluted. We've dropped too much equity to our investors, because the more mature you are, the less equity you have to give away, right? Because even though we were having paid clients and visibility in France on social media and in the news, you're still a small company. I mean, even with two bank clients, it was we were still small. So we were the company that brought interest to many investors, VC, etc. And one of them, the one who invested in our company, we have been signing a $3 million US dollars deal with our investors in the US, but they've been taking too much equity.
Which means like you lost control of the long term?
Not the control, but they were having a, you know, like in every company there is a board. The board is like the top.
We decide the main
exactly, right?
Orientations.
And yeah, and they had two seats in our board and that was too much.
That was already too much.
Yeah.
Which makes the seat quite expensive. Huh?
Yeah, it is. But yes, it's. I think you have to raise money when you have to grow. You don't have to raise money for raising money. It's a nonsense, really. And what the mistake people do, and the one I've been doing as well, is trying to look for money too early. And raising too much money is not a good thing as well. Like, you know, we signed a $3 million US dollar deals with the VC and the venture capital. And that was too much. We should have been raising less, way less. Because if you raise less, then you have to drop less equity to your investors and you can control. You know, when they say, okay, guys, we put $2 million cash in your company, you're like, fuck this shit. How? You know, like, so yeah, I think don't raise too much money and raise with good investors.
And now that you have the experience of going through with successful fundraising, do you think that the network you had back then imported more than the presentation and the solution behind? Do you think that you were able to raise the money because you had the right connection or because you had the right product? Or a mix of both of them? It's forbidden to answer a mix of both of them.
Okay. I would say the idea is nothing. It's how you execute the idea. I would say if you were getting successful, it's the idea is 5%, maybe 10. 90% is execution and luck. You have to be there at the right time. You know, like Birdie Sense, the first company was, if we had done that 5 years before, no way, too early. If we do that now, too late, too many actors, too many players in the industry. So it's the idea is important, but it's how you execute. The team is the number one thing. The team is the number one thing. And raising money, if you don't have the good team, it's fucked up. It will never work. You have to get the great co-founders with the great skills, and you have to find people that are better than you. Always people that will be able to take you to the next level quicker than if you had to do it by yourself only.
Yeah, completely. That will help you so much, and that will actually put your ego in parentheses. And
you have to. I mean, you have to. If learning is, I've been, yeah, you know, I got my ego, so sometimes I got in fight. I know everything. Guys, I'm the CEO, blah blah. You know, and
yeah, whenever you have to use this joker, there is something wrong.
Yeah, right. But sometimes, you know, it's cool to say that, like, yeah, guys, I'm the CEO. Just like listen. But no, like, you know, joke aside, yeah, raising money is about the team, how cash can you make, how big is your market, and of course the idea and the presentation and network is super important. If you get introduced by someone, hey, let's say that you are an investor. You say, hey, you should meet Fabian because I just met this guy like 2 weeks ago in a whatever event. You should meet this guy. Okay, then the guy introduces you to him, right? And then it works. But network is great. It can make you go faster in discussion with your investors, but it's not the thing that will make you sign with them. It's how much cash you do and how can you grow fast and well, and do you have this team which is solid enough to move forward in the best conditions.
So let's say for the people listening to us today that may be facing the same issue, knowing like, okay, I have the right market fit, I have my monetization, I have my PowerPoint which is ready for the presentation. So should I start calling VC one by one on the phone, or should I just hang out in events trying to meet as many people as possible?
I think you can do both. I mean, looking for investors is a good thing. It's a good challenge, really. So you have to go, and even now with my new company, we've been reaching out to investors already. Say, hey guys, this is what we do. We don't want to raise money yet, but just now you know what we do. Let's talk in a few months. And so it's good. It's really good to talk with investors. if you get the right product, if you think that you are, that raising money is not going to kill you, because that can kill you as well, and if you think that you are mature enough to raise money, then go for it. There is no rule. There is no patent, really. There is, and sorry to say, but it's a mix of, if you have the mix of getting the good presentation with the good product, with starting to get some revenues, then yes, go for investors. Go. If you want to go international, of course, yeah.
So what will be your one and unique advice you give to our listeners when it comes to raise money for their startup? The one and unique advice that they can carry them and that will help them on the long term?
On a statistic point of view, on 100 startups, only 3 of them raise money and 1 lives over 5 years, which means it's super hard to raise money and super hard to stay alive. I'm sorry to say that, guys, but it's a very, very big challenge to stay alive with a startup. So my biggest advice would be take the time. I mean, don't dilute yourself too early. There is no, I mean, I know that we all as entrepreneurs, we have to get cash to live, we get to get paid, salaries, etc. So I know it's hard not to be paid when you start the company, but willing to have money too early, which kills your company. So start to get growth, start to get paid clients, work on your branding, be online, be visible, and then yes, look for money. That can be quick, that can be in 6 months. In the best case, that can be in 4 months, 3 months. And in other case, that can take 2 years, 3 years, depending. So you have to be, when you start a company, if you want to raise funds directly, it means that you are not mature enough. Take the time.
And that will take us to the next part and the last part of the interview. What learnings have you got after successfully fundraising money with your first company?
If you like the podcast, want us to interview more entrepreneurs and share with you the best failures and experiences ever, you can make a little difference. By visiting mistakers.co, you can support our work with a contribution started at less than $1 per month. Just visit any pages and click on the Support Us button. You can cancel the subscription at any time, and in the time being, we'll work on one of the thematics you ask us. So it's simple, visit mistakers.co and spread the love.
So Fabien, you managed to raise money to get a successful product, which, by the way, congratulations, because entrepreneurs who can successfully say, you know what, my first company, I managed to take it through the next level, are not a lot, so it's good to be actually in presence of one of them. And don't forget, guys, on mistakers.co/blog, you can find the detail of the interview, the contact, the recommendation, all the mentors we've been mentioning, and the link toward the initial project, and any kind of materials we can get you. Now, Fabien, the question that arises is, you have the experience, and instead of looking for a 9-to-6 job, you decided to open a second startup. Tell us what packages did you bring with you from the first experience when you started this new? But maybe before answering, could you briefly introduce your new project?
Sure. So the new company is called Social Crunch. Social Crunch. And so we're developing a mobile application, which is called Fatster, and whose mission is to help overweight people to find their best buddy to lose weight with. So basically, we connect overweight people together so they can find someone who looks like them, who is lonely as well, and who doesn't find the motivation to start their diet. So it's like Tinder for weight people, but there is no sex. I mean, this is not what we're looking for. It's really matching people together so they can lose weight. So the company has been, the idea came about over a year ago, and I started to work on that, and then I just dropped. I said, okay, maybe this is not the good time to do it, because I was still on my other company. But what we've been doing in 6 months, this is what we've been doing in 3 years on my first company. So we brought with us skills in finance, in marketing, in product development, on product strategy, on online strategy. So what we've been doing in less than 6 months is what we've been doing in 3 years on my first company. And we've also been raising money on this company at a very early stage. Why did we raise money? Because we get diluted, and I can give the valuation. We have been raising over like 100,000 euros beside our friends and families. And
so what you call love money.
Exactly, love money, correct. Love money, like it's the pre-seed investment round. And so we've been raising 100,000 euros at a 1 million euros post-money valuation, which means when an investor puts 10,000 euros, he gets back 1%. And it's, I mean, we're generous. Giving 1% back for 10,000 is generous. But the people we decided to move forward with are people from our network, people who know that we've been doing great previously. I mean, it's my new company is a totally different team than before. It's a totally different team. But the investors that we have with us are part of the top companies here in the world. We have Airbus, we have Hermes, we have Air France. We have very, 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 very top executive managers from the biggest companies. So we've been integrating them in the adventure because they have smart money. They're not looking after the 10,000 euros. Oh shit, where is my money? We know, like, they can take time. And they have knowledge and network for us. This is why we decided to raise money with these guys at start.
So your first learning from the previous experience would be to raise the smart money that you mentioned earlier, which is like making sure that the people that will get something out of your company will bring you something more valuable for you. In this case, not only the cash, but the connections.
Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, we've been signing a $3 million deals with the first investor. And now we've been just looking for 100,000 euros. So we can get like 6 months from runway, 6 months of cash. 100,000 euros is barely something. It's really nothing, really. You know, like the cash goes so fast. Really so fast. But by raising this small money, we will be able to have great KPIs in 6 months. And now in 6 months, we will be mature enough to raise maybe $1-2 million at a way better valuation. Which means if you raise, I don't know, like $1 million, then yes, we would drop 20% maximum, which means our valuation would be 5 million.
So your main learning is to start small,
yeah,
with the right people,
yes,
and just get your teeth sharp for the next level when you're gonna have to talk big numbers with bigger players.
Exactly, you have to be mature and you have to prove that you can do a lot with very little money. This is what people expect from you.
Yeah, and especially the startup, less money, more productivity, more imagination.
Exactly, you have to innovate, you have to make your brain work, and this is hard sometimes because, you know, like, people think money can go in super easily, but no. So, you know, if you spend 10 bucks, 10 euros, you have to make 100 with them. And it's not like traditional businesses, you know, like if you open like a bakery in Paris, you get fixed cost, you know how it works, but it's not scalable. You know, now you can grow for nothing and you can, it's called growth hacking. You can find ways to monetize the service. You can get, you know, like on the second company, we have paid clients on something that is not live yet.
Which is a
good proof of concept, right?
Yeah, first monetization, that's negative.
Yeah, I mean, we thought about something because we have two models in this company. We have a B2C model, like the app is available for everyone on the planet, a Fatster B2C. And we have Fatster Pro Health, which it's a dashboard that we provide to nutritionists and weight loss centers so they can follow up their patients' weight loss online. So we help them go digital and the patients use faster, and then the nutritionist can follow up the KPIs of the patients, they can advise online, etc., etc. So I said, oh, wow, cool. I mean, no one is doing that. So I've been looking out for a few nutritionists. I said, hey, guys, this is what we do. Oh, fuck, this is so great. Okay, you sign here. Okay, boom, signed. So
I said, okay. And done. Yeah. And started.
Yeah.
Fabien, it's been, it's going to be, unfortunately, be time for us to reach the conclusion of this podcast, on which the main idea was actually to go through your learning when it comes to raise money for a company, as we mentioned, the first pain point with the market fit,
yeah,
on which you mentioned, like, the day you have your first paid customers, you have a company, not hobby, so that could help you define when you reach the right market fit. The second point being the issues arising when comes the monetization. The main learning you share with us was to make sure you don't overprice and you start small enough to work with company flexible enough.
Correct.
To don't kill you with their own rhythm.
Very true.
The last point we mentioned was actually to raise money, and the main learning you share with us was make sure that you don't dilute yourself too much and you don't raise money for the wrong reason.
Exactly.
So you need the money, you get it. Don't get the money just because you have the opportunity. Get the money when you need this money.
Exactly.
Is there any last advice, tips, recommendations you would like to share with people that may be in your position back in 2016 or 17?
Yeah. I would say to someone who has not started the company yet, or someone
to someone who is looking to raise the money, which is like the main goal for customers.
The best advice is, there are so many advices to give, but I think the best one would be
the one advice:
know who you are and believe in yourself. If you think it's a good time to raise money, then trust yourself, but don't do it just for raising money. Just do it because raising money is takes time. So when you raise money, you don't focus on business. So you have to be sure that the business is running well before you raise money. I would say, yeah, have a running, I mean, not especially like a super well-running business, not making thousands and thousands of months, maybe not that. But be sure that even though the time you will focus on raising money will not kill the business itself. And this is, I think, the most complex part of raising money.
Yeah, because if you die before you actually receive the money on the bank,
it happens many cases.
Fabien, it was a pleasure talking to you today.
Same.
Is there, before we let the podcast go, any recommendation in terms of books, maybe websites that you could share with us?
Yes. As I said, I don't read books at all. I got one from Harvard, which is called Digital Team. It's a very small one written by Harvard Business Review, which is quite cool. But it's like this small, like maybe 100 pages, it's very small. For this book, and I would say if you want to get tips, go on the Y Combinator, Y Combinator. It's a website, they have online schools, and Y Combinator is the most prestigious startup accelerator in the world. It's like the Harvard of startups. They have like 20,000 applicants every year, and they take like not even 50, so yeah, it's so hard.
It's one of the biggest one.
And these guys, the guys pitching at YC, are super smart, and they are the best guys in the tech industry and in every industry. So yeah, go to the ycombinator.com website and read the Harvard Business Review going like online team. That will give you back the name, I forget it.
And we get, once again, all the information available on the on the notes, on the podcast, and on the website, mistakers.co/blog. Fabien, where can people find you nowadays?
They can find me in Brittany, in France, so Western France, and in Bangkok. And they can reach me out by email, and Facebook, and Twitter, and Instagram, whatever. Even by letters, if they want to.
So guys, don't forget, you'll get access to Fabien contact through the websites and the podcast notes. The podcast being available on the main platform like iTunes. iTunes soon, by the way, but for now Spotify, Google Play, and all the big ones. Fabien, once again, thank you. Thanks for your time. And do not forget, there is nothing like failure.
Exactly.
We hope you enjoyed this new episode of Mistakers.co. If you did, please share the podcast with your friends and fellow entrepreneurs. And if you wanna help us to do better for you, don't forget to visit us on mistaker.co. We see you in a week for new interviews. And do not forget, there is nothing like failure.